Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hello and welcome to episode 228 of Geektown Radio. I'm back this week with Matt. How are you doing?
I'm good, David. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. I'm exhausted because I've been at MCM Birmingham all weekend, so that's kind of, you know, a lot of walking around and taking photos and stuff, but it was good fun. But so what have you been up to before we get into that?
Just a quick mention of Call of Duty. I know I talked about it a bunch last time, but they added a new map. Was it last week? About last week or something like that. The funny thing was, me and Robert did a gaming podcast on a Wednesday, and there was this Reddit post leak sort of thing about 38 new maps. And we both speculated, like, okay, that's quite a few maps. Even if it's like 3 map packs or whatever, that's still a lot of maps.
Yes.
And then 2 days after that podcast, which we didn't know about, on the Friday, Activision did this post and they said there's going to be 2 maps that will be released for free, available to, you know, everyone, PlayStation, Xbox, PC, all those platforms. And basically what it is because there's obviously different game modes on Call of Duty that require bigger or smaller maps, they released this kind of small map, this new thing they've put in called Shoothouse 24/7. And what they've sort of done is put Kill Confirmed, Headquarters, and Team Deathmatch on that. And basically, once you go in and out of different lobbies and different games, it changes which of those 3 game modes. So Shoothouse itself isn't really a game mode, but it's rotating those 3 on this new map. What it sort of seems like they've done is taken inspiration from, there was a map called Shipment on the Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare, which was the 2007 game.
Right.
This seems like a sort of remix of that, but slightly bigger. It's still quite small, but not as small as Shipment, because you probably couldn't do a smaller map than Shipment.
Right.
If you want to look it up, just Google Shipment Call of Duty and then you'll see how small it is. Basically, it was this little square with grass on it with a few cargo container, not cargo containers.
Okay.
The big sort of shipment containers.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
That was all that was on that map. This is essentially that, but bigger, and some of the containers stack up and make bigger buildings and things like that.
Right, okay.
It's quite good. It's quite hectic, but that's kind of the idea of it. It's not got the, I think Ground War is 20 versus 20 or something. It's not got that. It's got like, I think 10v10 or something. It's got still quite hectic. And it's one of the problems with a small map like that is if someone gets, I think it's called a VTOL jet. If someone gets one of them and you're outside, you've got a very, very high chance of getting killed, because this thing will float. It's basically this jet that will float across the top of the map and will obviously shoot anyone that it sees.
Right.
So if you're on a small map that's very open and there's a jet above you, then you have to run inside very quickly. And I mean, the good thing, if you get one of those as a player and you put it in the middle of the map, you're going to get quite a lot of kills. Even if you still die, your jet's going to get a lot of kills. It's quite fun though. It's quite good as long as you can kind of cover your corners, I suppose, and somewhat hopefully rely on certain teammates, even though they don't always play the way they should. But yeah, it's still quite fun. It's still quite good. I haven't actually been on the other map yet. I think the other map is meant for the ground war game mode, which I don't play a whole lot. It's basically the massive scale 20v20 kind of thing. But yeah, this new map is quite good. It brings back some interesting memories of Shipment and that sort of thing. But it's good to see. I mean, the game hasn't even been out for that long and they've already added 2 maps and some different game modes and stuff. So
good.
It's quite good so far.
Cool.
Death Stranding, the new game, of course, from Hideo Kojima, of course, the previous developer of Metal Gear Solid, because nobody else would really make Metal Gear Solid, let's be honest.
Yes.
But yeah, the weird, wonderful mind of Kojima is back after the Konami debacle. We won't get into that. If you want to know more about it, look that up. I'm sure you'll find a bunch of information.
Yes.
But essentially, he had to leave Konami because of certain reasons, and he wasn't treated very well by Konami. And then he formed his own studio called Kojima Productions. Productions. He's started working with Sony. He's now a second party studio, which basically means the game's an exclusive to PS4, but Kojima Productions isn't owned by Sony. That's what second party basically means. And then he started creating Death Stranding and started to add quite the cast list. Norman Reedus, Mads Mikkelsen, Troy Baker, Guillermo del Toro. Those are the big kind of notable ones I can remember. There's a bunch of other people in there as well. But yeah, quite the cast list, of course. And you play as Norman, well, not as Norman Reedus. You play the playable character Norman Reedus. His character is called Sam. And essentially what Death Stranding is, there was this event called the Death Stranding, and basically the world got destroyed, and you as Sam have to rebuild America, essentially. But there's all kind of weird things in there. There's different villains in there. There's different weird things that are happening. And most of the game, you are basically doing these little deliveries. You put cargo on your back or on your bike or on your truck, what depends on what you can find, what's available to you. And you essentially have to put cargo on your back and deliver them from, you know, point A to point B. That's not all Death Stranding is. It's got more in there, and then there's weird plot things that happen. It's kind of interesting because when Kojima was releasing the first, I don't know, two or three or four trailers, however many he ended up releasing, there was always like, okay, what's this weird thing? What's that weird thing? As you slowly go through the actual game, because obviously the trailers were out of order.
Yeah.
As you actually go through the game and unlock the plot in, I guess, chronological order with some flashbacks and stuff, it isn't quite that complicated. There is still weird stuff in there, like the thing with the baby and all that sort of thing, which is explained, at least of what I've seen, very, very well. I'm on chapter 6, I think, and there's supposed to be 15 chapters. I must have played 25 hours of the game already, but I was talking to some people yesterday, and they said the last kind of 8 to 10 chapters are about 2 hours or an hour each. It's because chapter 3 itself is really, really long.
Right.
Chapter 3 must be at least 8 hours or something long. But yeah, it's really, really good so far. Of course, if you've played Metal Gear or you like Kojima or any of that sort of thing, you'll probably like the game quite a lot. Obviously, it's been very divisive because that's just the part of just where we live in. But yeah, it's been very, very good so far. I'm looking forward to seeing, obviously, the plot through. And I mean, yeah, it's got a great cast in it. So it's pretty good as well.
It's one I'll probably pick up at some point, but I've got other things to play at the moment. So I will get to it at some point.
Cool. Atypical, I remember mentioning the first two episodes, I think, last time I was on that I'd seen. I finished the third season last night. Really, really, really good season. A lot of emotional things that happen. Obviously, I won't spoil anything, but in a lot of different scenes, you'll want to just hug a lot of the characters because they're pretty much all going through a lot of things this season. Obviously, one of the big plot points this season is Sam going off to college. That obviously creates a lot of different things, and not just with Sam himself, obviously with his parents, because they have to look after him a bit more because of his autism and things like that. How other characters sort of respond to him and try and help him, and how he either does or doesn't take that help on board. And then there's other new characters are introduced. There's things going on with Casey this season. There's things going on with everybody really this season, and it's all quite emotional and very, very well done. And it's funny because Atypical kind of, to me, is one of them shows where it comes out and I sort of go, oh cool, Atypical is out this season, and then you start watching it and you go, oh yeah, this show's really, really good. So hopefully once they renew it for season 4, which they haven't done, I'll watch it a bit sooner. It'll be a bit more at the top of my list
next year
to watch.
I've watched the first episode so far. You do forget how brilliant that series is. It is really, really solid and very funny, but has a lot of an emotional heart to it. And I love the first episode. I just hadn't quite got around to it because I had a bunch of, well, basically because of the Apple TV stuff dropping and, so I just hadn't got to it. But I really love that series, and I do hope they renew it for another season because it's so good. So good. So I'm looking forward to watching the rest of it though.
And I've looked up some discussion online about the show, and a lot of people that do actually have autism have responded to this season specifically very, very well, so which is always good. Important. But yeah, can't wait to see if hopefully they renew it for season 4. It won't look very good if Netflix cancels a show that's about an autistic character, I will say that. But
I mean, arguably you shouldn't just keep it on air because it's a show about an autistic character, but yes, the fact that it is a very loved series and and it happens to have an autistic character in the lead, and it is also a very, very well written series, then yes, I think randomly cancelling it, I mean, because Netflix have got to this point where things get 3 seasons and then they cancel them. There are a few shows that go on a bit longer, and I'm hoping this is one of them.
Yeah. End of the, I guess, effing world is what it's been kind of called. Because literally in the title, the other letters are blanked out. I only watched the season 2 premiere last night. All Four has had a nice little kind of update as well. Got some nice little, I don't know, just it's updated and stuff. Looks a bit better. Watched this season 2 premiere. I don't know how many episodes are in this season. Usually like 6 or 8 or something. I didn't think the return episode was very good, and it doesn't resolve the cliffhanger from last season at all.
Right.
And given the fact that we've waited either a year or 2 years, I can't remember when the first season came out, but the first season ends on a massive cliffhanger. I won't say obviously what the cliffhanger is, but it doesn't resolve that at all. It doesn't address anything related to
that,
it.
That seems like a mistake. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Cause it was basically the first episode introduces this, I think, a new character, at least from what I remember. And it focuses a lot on that particular person. And I was sort of waiting throughout the episode. I was like, okay, this is only 22 minutes. You haven't got like 58 or 45 minutes here. And then the episode ended, I was like, oh, you didn't address the cliffhanger at all. It'd be like if you came back from, you know, the Negan cliffhanger, Walking Dead. It'd be like if you came back and you focused on Carol for the episode or something. And the overall just writing and quality of the episode, I get that it is supposed to be the show that has very strange and different characters, and that is what the first episode of season 2 focuses on, this new kind of strange, interesting kind of character. But when you don't address a massive cliffhanger, that's quite a big problem.
Yes.
So I was disappointed with that. But I mean, the second episode's available right now, so I guess I'll check that out later. But yeah, really strange that they didn't do that.
Yes, that's a little weird. End of the effing world is a show which kind of bypassed me entirely. I didn't get time to watch the first season. It's on Netflix as well, because it's a Netflix co-production, I think.
Mm-hmm. Season 2 isn't on Netflix.
Yeah, no, it's Netflix worldwide, and then it will go on to Netflix UK after a while, it's on All Four if you're in the UK, so you can get it on both places. I think first season 1, I may try and get to it at some point, but I just haven't got to it now.
I guess my advice would be watch the first 2 episodes back to back, because then you'll might get an answer for the cliffhanger.
That's an odd decision. For me, I've been at MCM Birmingham all weekend, which was good fun. I mean, it's always good fun, the MCM shows. Little short on guests, possibly, I think it would be fair to say this time around. There were some great people. I mean, Anthony Daniels was there, obviously, C-3PO. He did a fabulous, fabulous panel, which will be going up online. By the time this podcast goes out, it should be up online. Interesting with him, he actually, usually, you know, when they do panels, you have an interviewer and an interviewee, and they come up on stage and somebody interviews them. Anthony Daniels did the whole thing like a one-man show. He just took to the stage himself, was wandering around asking questions of the audience. He was brilliant. He was funny. I really enjoyed watching him. He was hilarious. He's got a book out, as he repeatedly told us, but was making fun of the fact that he was repeatedly telling us that he has a book out. He's got a book out about his life of being C-3PO, which looks really good as well. Watched his panel. Sean Astin was up as well, and you'll be hearing more about that later. And Brian DeShunt and Amelia Rose Blair, who are the husband and wife team who were on Detroit Become Human, and they do Twitch streaming as well. Yeah. And we actually interviewed them before. Yeah, they're lovely, lovely guys. And we did an interview with them when they were at Manchester, I think, earlier in the year. I think they did a panel, but I didn't actually catch that because I was trying to see other bits of the show and stuff. But yeah, so those guys were there. I believe Pearl Mackey was around from Doctor Who signing autographs, although I didn't see her at anything. Some of the Star Wars Rebels guys were there as well. So they did a panel. It was really good fun. I mean, it's always great fun. There's lots and lots of geeky stuff to see. Some fabulous cosplay that will be going up on our Instagram feed at some point when I get around to editing the photos, which I haven't done yet. I've got to sort all that stuff out yet. But MCM, always, always worth going to. London's great. Birmingham's their second British show. Like I say, they're a little short on some guests, but the people they had, I thought, were really fun and entertaining and funny. So that was really good. Had a lovely time there. I think the next one's in February if you're in Birmingham. And then there's May for London. And then there's a few in between as well. There's Manchester and Scotland throughout the year. So always worth going to the MCM comms. Outside of that, gaming-wise, guys, Star Wars Fallen Order came out, so I've been playing a bit of that. It's kind of Uncharted with the Star Wars skin over the top of it, pretty much.
That's what I've heard, yeah, and yeah. seen.
Not that I'm saying that's a bad thing. That's a very, very good thing, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I love the Uncharted games. They're brilliant. So that with Star Wars sprinkled over the top is perfectly fine with me. I'm very happy with that. And you get to wield a lightsaber, and it's really well acted. It's really good fun. It's got the, I can't remember the guy's name, but the
lead... I think it's Cameron Monaghan or something like that.
Cameron Monaghan, that's it. The guy that played Joker in Gotham, or not Joker in Gotham.
That's Joker.
he's the lead in it, and he's great. It's really good. The only slight gripe I have with it is I don't like the save points, because you have this sort of thing that if you get killed, like they have with Uncharted, if you accidentally fall off a cliff, you kind of lose a little bit of health and then they kind of pop you back on the top of the cliff. That's not too bad. The problem is if you lose all your health and then you die and you have to completely restart, it pushes you all the way back to a save point. And that's okay as long as the save points are kind of marked relatively close together. And I kind of had one situation where I'd been through this quite long sequence without a save point and completely died. And it took me right back to sort of, you know, 15 minutes beforehand. And I'm like, really? You're going to make me play through all that again? So that was kind of annoying. So
I've heard it's very Dark Souls-esque with the save points, which also reminds me, because I haven't really played much Dark Souls, but
neither
with Sekiro that I've played, which is very similar to that, it's got that sort of thing. You have like little posts that you sort of rest at, and then when you die, you go back to the most recent one, which is their way of kind of punishing you, I suppose.
Yeah, so. You have places where there are places where you can meditate, and basically you meditate, and that allows you to upgrade the character and stuff, and also serves as a save point. So I've been playing some of that. The other thing is, though, Planet Zoo, which is out at the moment, I've been furiously playing my way through that, and I love messing around in that game. I've started a franchise mode, so you can actually build your own zoos rather than going through the career mode. I've got all the bronzes on career mode, but I haven't been through and got all the gold yet, but I've got all the bronzes on career mode. I'm playing around with my own franchise zoo at the moment and trying to build that out, so that's been really good fun. I love that game. If you like building games and you like animals, it's great, and you get to learn lots of stuff about animals as well, which is wonderful. TV-wise, The Crown is now back. That launched on Sunday night. Watched the first episode of that, and it really continues as The Crown for the first two seasons, but with an entirely different cast, and it works. It doesn't seem to miss a beat at all. And they sort of acknowledge the cast change right at the start, because the opening scene is her picking the new version of the stamp, which has the sort of older image of her, you know, from young queen to the sort of middle-aged queen. And it sort of in the show kind of acknowledges that there's this change. That's how they open it. But pretty much all the cast has changed. The only person I think that stayed over was, there is a short bit with Winston Churchill, and it's the same actor there. But apart from that, the rest of the cast is completely new, and they're doing a fabulous job. You know, it's Olivia Colman. Of course they're doing a fabulous job, you know. But if you like the first two seasons of The Crown, it's going to be a continuation of that. And the writing's still as brilliant as ever. It feels like the same show, despite the fact the entire cast is different.
Bit of a question for you for The Crown, because it's been regarded as quite a very, very good TV show and on Netflix and that has my interest. What other kind of shows would you say are kind of along the same lines that I would maybe enjoy that were kind of sort of similar? So like, is it similar to like House of Cards in any kind of way? Is that kind of political
yes
thing?
Yeah, there is a certain amount of that. I think in terms of other Netflix shows, that's probably the closest to it would be House of Cards. It's not quite got the scheming side of things that House of Cards has, you know. It's not to that sort of level. But yeah, I mean, I think certainly that would be the closest thing, I think, as a Netflix show that it's probably related to. But yeah, I really love it and really enjoying it. So I'm very, very happy to have that back. And other things, I did, as I said, watch the first episode of Atypical, so I'll be watching the rest of that. And Watchmen and Walking Dead, of course, which we're watching weekly and doing a weekly podcast on that as well. So you can catch Matt and mine's Watchmen and Walking Dead podcast over at Entertainment Talk, because we're doing those weekly. We've got, what, two episodes of Walking Dead? Three episodes of Walking Dead and five Watchmen. Yes. Mm-hmm. Watchmen, wonderfully complicated, but brilliant all the way. So very, very much enjoying that. That's all the stuff we've been doing for the last couple of weeks. Here is the TV and film news.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
TV and film news, we start off with the renewals, cancellations and pickups. ITV have cancelled the Rob Lowe series Wild Bill after one season, which is a shame because it was kind of fun and interesting British cop drama where you had Rob Lowe playing this big American police chief that kind of comes in and ends up trying to tidy up this countryside town, essentially, in the UK. So I really enjoyed the first season of that. I'm ashamed they've not made any more. I think basically it just didn't get the viewing figures and they didn't manage to sell it back overseas, so they weren't making money back off it. Rob Lowe is also now on another show, so that might have also not helped. I mean, potentially it's only like 3 or 5 episodes or something they did, so potentially they could have got him back maybe in the downtime between him doing, because he's doing 911 Lone Star, which is the 911 spin-off extension of that franchise.
I keep forgetting about that until we mention it on different occasions.
Yes. So he's the lead in that, so you might have been able to get him back to do a bit, but that probably also didn't help. That has been cancelled. In terms of renewals though, we've got some quite good renewals. You've got DC Universe has renewed Titans for season 3, so that is getting a third season. We still haven't had season 2 over here. It looks like it is going to come to Netflix, but we don't know when, because there is a banner if you go onto Netflix that says, you know, it's official, season 2 is coming. So that I assume that means that they have it and it is coming.
It'll probably be the same as last year, I imagine.
So it's either going to be December or January. We don't know exactly when. I think it was December last year, so that will drop as box set on Netflix UK. Netflix have also renewed The Witcher for season 2 before the first season even airs, because that's out in December, and very happy they've picked that up. From the little clips I've seen, I'm quite really looking forward to that, but they've obviously got some confidence in it, so that's good.
That seems like a very long term thing for Netflix, because they got, I think there's someone said 5 or 6 books for them to go off of.
Yeah.
So obviously it's based off the book, not the game, but it seems like it's going down very, very well. I've been very impressed with the trailers and the cast and everything. I'm looking forward to the mad podcast marathon in December. It's probably going to be one of Netflix's long-term shows. I say that now, they might cancel it after 3 seasons, but we'll see how things go. But at least we've got 2 seasons at least to look forward to.
So you know it's going to be hanging around for a bit, so I'm very glad that they've actually shown some confidence in it and it's coming back. And Brooklyn Nine-Nine has been renewed for an 8th season by NBC. NBC really knew what they were doing when they picked that up after Fox dropped it a couple of years ago. So I'm very, very glad that that's back. And I'm sure a lot of the UK fans are glad to see it back as well. I think that lands January. It's usually January early in the new year it airs in the UK on E4.
Yeah, I think it starts around the same time Good Place has its last couple of episodes in January.
Okay. So that will be coming back. Well, we presume that will be coming back onto E4 anyway.
Hopefully.
That should be the case. And all the previous seasons are on Netflix as well, if you want to go and catch up with Brooklyn Nine-Nine. They've also, Sky One this morning announced a release date for new comedy starring David Schwimmer, him of Friends fame, called Intelligence, which they announced the show a while back. It's created and written by Nick Mohammed, who's a great comedy writer and an actor. It's a workplace comedy set at GCHQ, Review, which is the sort of big UK listening post, but it's a comedy. It's where they tackle international and domestic cybercrime. And David Schwimmer plays NSA agent Jerry, who comes over from the US to join the team, and he enlists an inept and tactless computer analyst called Joseph, played by Nick Mohammed, in a power grab that threatens to disrupt the team's ability to combat cyber terrorism. So that's the basic for it. The press release describes GCHQ as a kind of weedier, geekier version of MI5. And I'm sure they're very happy with that description. So I emailed Sky back after going, I'm very much looking forward to this, but I do hope the person that wrote that press release realizes they're now on a GCHQ list somewhere. But I think that could be quite good fun. It's nice to see David Schwimmer back doing comedy and stuff. I like Nick Mohammed stuff. Nick Mohammed was also the voice of Piglet in the Christopher Robin movie as well. That's the other thing. And he was in, he was in the sitcom Uncle, which, you know, we covered a lot on this show.
Because the BBC.
The BBC one. Sitcom, which
I need to watch
brilliant.
That still. So.
Yeah, it's brilliant, brilliant. But he was in that as well.
Yeah, the David Schwimmer thing. I'm coming towards the end of Friends. I've got, I think, 10 episodes left or something. I watched another one yesterday while watching Community, because I'm kind of watching them at the same time.
Right.
But yeah, I suppose once I finish Friends, it's going to be good to have David Schwimmer in something else. Plus then I can also watch The Morning Show and have Jennifer Aniston back as well.
Yes, so, yes, you can. They're all starting to kind of get back out of, I mean, it's not like any of them need the money. They still make something like 25 million a year each off the repeat fees from Friends. So
because it reruns on Comedy Central or something.
Well,
it?
Yeah, it reruns kind of a few different places. But yes, apparently they each make 25 million purely on reruns of Friends.
Wow.
So, yeah, not a bad life if you can get it. Intelligence, that show's called, it's coming 18th of February. They've said that's coming to Sky One. So that's one to look out for. In other news, Amazon have picked up another huge license. They've picked up William Gibson's novel, The Peripheral, for an adaptation. And the adaptation is coming from the Westworld creators, Jonathan Nolan and Lisa Joy. They're the people that are tackling it. Based on the best-selling novel by William Gibson, who's a huge sci-fi writer. It's a sci-fi thriller that follows the story of Flynn Fisher, a woman trying to hold together the pieces of her broken family in a forgotten corner of tomorrow's America. Flynn is smart, ambitious, and doomed. She has no future until the future comes calling for her. So that's the strapline for it. It's kind of set in this sort of alt future setup thing. So it's one of those sort of dramas. I would watch anything that Nolan and Joy make, because I think they've done such an amazing job with Westworld. I think this sounds like it could be brilliant. It's being adapted by the Oscar-nominated writer Scott B. Smith, who did A Simple Plan, the film. He's going to be the creator and showrunner, and Jonathan Nolan and Lisa Joy are the exec producers of it. But yeah, that's another big title coming to Amazon. They're really, really going all out for their big things. They've had not that many things like that are huge dropping. They've had a few stuff, you know, things like The Boys have come out, but you know, you've obviously got the Lord of the Rings thing coming. You've got this, they've got a whole host of other stuff that they've got in development. So, it's Amazon's going to be another one that's, I think, definitely, definitely worth the money.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, in terms of Westworld and stuff, I've enjoyed obviously season one and two, really looking forward to season three. Obviously it looks like it's going to be a little bit different, but in where that makes sense and all that sort of thing. I mean, if Greg Berlanti can be, well, not really in charge of 20, 30 shows, whatever. I'm sure these two can handle the two. But yeah, as long as they juggle them both well, both treat them well in terms of this new show and obviously Westworld, then I think it'll be all right. But yeah, they've done a good job so far with Westworld. So I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with this. It's interesting as well, because that means they don't have an overall deal with HBO, but I never read that they actually did.
So yeah, I mean, I think this looks like it could be really good. And of course, as I say, with this show, they're exec producing, and with Westworld, they are directly writing and show running, I think. So I think that's probably the difference between the two. But anything they're involved in, I've definitely piques my interest. And the fact that it's William Gibson's thing, which I imagine is quite difficult to adapt, given that it's William Gibson. So yeah, that's going to be a very interesting one to see how that works. Over on Apple TV Plus, they have picked up an adaptation of the spy thriller Slow Horses with Gary Oldman set as the lead. So again, pulling out all the stops. Slow Horses follows a team of British intelligence agents who serve in a dumping ground department of MI5 called Slough House. Oldman will star as Jacob Lamb, a brilliant but irascible leader of spies who ends up in Slough House due to their career-ending mistakes. So, I mean, it's billed as a thriller, but the person behind it is Will Smith, not that one, the writer one. he's best known for working with Armando Iannucci on things like Veep, and was co-writer and co-producer on Veep, also wrote The Thick of It. Graham Yost, who was exec producer on things like The Americans and Sneaky Pete, is exec producing as well. So it's interesting because the premise sounds like it could go either way. It sounds like it could be very much a comedy premise or could be very much a thriller premise, but they've got a kind of somebody who's best known for writing comedy as the person that's writing it, but it's been billed as a thriller. So it's going to be really intriguing to see where this lands in terms of tone. Slough House novels are written by Mick Herron. There are 8 books and novellas that they can work from, so they're not exactly short of material. We're on the Crime Writers Association Golden Dagger Award for the second book in the series as well. So they're reasonably well-acclaimed books. And again, Gary Oldman is the lead. It's Apple kicking it out the park once again.
I mean, they're certainly at the moment, obviously, because they're a new streaming service, they're going more for, obviously, quality over quantity.
Yeah.
And it'll be very interesting in about, let's say, in about a year, once, of course, HBO Max is out and Peacock is... have they given a date for...
No, I don't think they've actually given a date for Peacock yet.
But once the others come out, and obviously once Disney Plus comes out over here, that's when the streaming wars truly sort of start. But it's even interesting when you said when you went to watch more Atypical, and then like Apple TV Plus was there, and then those two were kind of already competing sort of for your time. So once these streaming services add more and more and more shows, which they're always doing, it's going to make competition kind of even tougher. But yeah, I mean, at the moment, if you do go for quality over quantity, which they've done obviously with Jason Momoa and all the people from The Morning Show, as long as they can kind of keep things good, then I guess they'll keep people subscribed. But we'll just have to see how Apple TV Plus does in the next year or so.
Yeah, I mean, Apple TV Plus is really an interesting setup because of the fact that they only really have 3 or 4 shows which have a sort of broad adult appeal, and then on top of that there's a couple of kids shows, and there's like Oprah, but there's only really one comedy and 3 big dramas with For All Mankind and C and The Morning Show at the moment. So in terms of original stuff, there isn't that much on there, but it is only $5.99 a month, and they are releasing more stuff. Yeah, they've got things releasing at the end of November, things releasing in December. I'm sure there'll be more stuff that gets released each month, so they are kind of slowly building. But it was interesting that they launched without a huge amount of catalogue. You know, you compare that to something like HBO Max, which, I mean, you know, we know, as we spoke about a few weeks ago, isn't launching here. But HBO Max has about 20 original shows.
Yeah, plus all the things that are already on HBO.
Yeah, so, plus all the stuff on HBO. Plus, they're going to be airing the DC Universe stuff as well. So, and all the back catalogue of things from, like, CW, HBO. I mean, that's going to be a ridiculous service. So unfortunately, like I say, we're not getting it here, but yeah, that's going to be a really interesting one. Then, you know, you've got Disney, who have got such a huge back catalogue of movies and TV shows that they're going to be on that, as well as all their original stuff. And they've got less original stuff coming out, but they have got that huge back catalogue of things as well.
And plus, that Fox acquisition, they've picked up so many properties.
Yeah,
it's quite something.
The stuff that they have got as well, you know, the original things that they are making are, you know, licenses for Marvel, licenses for Star Wars. So, you know, even the original stuff, even though there's possibly less of them and there aren't that many new original shows coming onto it, the ones that are on there are huge things. So, yeah, I mean, next year is going to be very much the streaming wars. As you say, Peacock coming as well. We don't know what's going to happen with that over here because that's NBC. And obviously Comcast own NBC and they own Sky, so we don't know whether they're going to launch that as a streaming service internationally or it's just going to be the US, or whether it'll get merged into Sky some way. Not sure what's going to happen with that. Next year is going to be very, very interesting. The amount of content out there is insane.
If you thought you were struggling for time to watch your favourite shows, then
next year is going to get much, much worse, or much, much better, depending on how you look at it.
It's a good problem to have.
Yes, so, it is.
Because we'd rather have far too much to watch or too little.
Yes. You know? Yeah. So it's interesting times ahead over the next year. So that's all the news we've got for this week. Next, we have an interview. As I mentioned earlier, I was at MCM Birmingham this weekend. So the interview comes from MCM Birmingham. It's with Sean Astin. It's basically the panel that he did at MCM. There will be a video version of this, which is up online on YouTube. But obviously, if you're listening to this in the car and you want to be able to do something else, you don't want to be trying to watch YouTube at the same time. That's not very safe. So I put the audio of the interview out up on here as well. Sean Astin, I'm sure many of you know, Sam in Lord of the Rings. He's in Goonies. He's one of those guys that pops up in TV shows. Like, he popped up in the recent episode of Supergirl. He was in 24. He was in the last few episodes of Big Bang Theory and, of course, Stranger Things, where he played Bob. So he gets, you know, talks about all the different things that he's been in, and just really lovely. It was really, really sweet and seems like a lovely, lovely guy. It was a really nice interview. Here's the audio from that. We will see you afterwards with some highlights for next week on TV.
Hi, Sean.
Hello, my dear.
It's like we've never met, but we were talking backstage. But it always feels weird because you sit down and go, so hi, how are you doing?
Again. Let's carry this out in front of people, shall we? That's what I was thinking.
You were having some deep and meaningful conversations there.
About technology.
About technology and life. And
raise your hand. Wait, does everybody have their phones on them? Can you turn your lights on?
Oh, yeah, turn your lights on your phones. Let's have a look. Oh my God, it's kind of amazing.
That's what the end of civilization looks like.
That's exactly what.
Oh, that's incredible, you guys. Wow, I feel like Bono.
Yeah, actually, we have to start waving them in the air now. Like,
oh, I have to sing.
Yes.
In the name of love. Sorry. I like to sing.
Good.
My daughter says to me, my daughters hate my voice. I have three daughters. Allie, 22, she'll be 23 this month. She was the girl who played Eleanor at the end of The Lord of the Rings, the little daughter who comes running up to Sam. Yes, that's how I feel. 23 now, finished university, in her own apartment. And then we've got 17, Elizabeth, and 14 is Bella, Isabella. So they all hate my singing voice.
Is it a bad singing
voice? No, it's a wonderful singing voice. It's just never in tune. It's never on key. But no, except when I have a microphone, if I can hear myself, it can be a little bit better. You'll see in a minute. But
what's your go-to karaoke song then?
Oh,
mine's Starship. We Built This City.
We Built This City. Yeah.
Rock and roll. Like, such a good song.
It's a great one. The first time I ever went to a nightclub, I was 18. I was in Australia, and that song was on, and I was talking to girls. So, good memories. Definitely good memories for that song. I don't know. I like Billy Joel.
Billy Joel.
Come out, Virginia, don't let me wait. Your Catholic girl start much too late. Oh, sooner or later it comes down to fate. I might as well be the one. That's dedicated to Virginia, who's with me working in my corner this week. I don't know where she is.
Where's Virginia?
Yeah.
She's over there.
Virginia,
Hello.
There you go.
Hello. She's
only the good die young. There it is.
You've got a lovely voice. What do you think, you guys? Good karaoke voice? There you go.
So my daughter says, I get a play, my first play ever. It's John Cleese adaptation of a French farce. And she walks into the kitchen and I said, hey, I just got offered my first, well, I've been offered others, but the first full play. She said, do you have to sing in it?
Oh,
I said, no. She said, then you should do it. And then the next one came in and said the same thing. And then my wife came in. She's a little more politic. And she said, oh, are you going to sing? I said, no. She said, oh.
Sean, I wanted to go back before your daughters were born.
Yeah.
When you're a youngie, you're a young thing.
Yeah.
Because I am a very, very, very big Goonies fan.
Oh, yeah.
Are you getting to the Goonies and the Goonies fans here? Now, I saw that it's going to be 35 years old next year. Crazy! How do you feel when you look back at yourself growing up in front of the camera? Is it weird? Is it like looking back at an old photo when you watch your old movies?
Sometimes I'll take a moment. Okay, so this year, I was lucky enough to perform in Big Bang Theory. Anybody see me in Big Bang Theory?
Hey, fans?
I was in three episodes at the end of the final season, which was just mental. I was such a fan of the show right when it came out, and it did so much for these Comic Cons. You know, it really helped popularize the Comic Cons. It turned it from sort of a fringe thing into a kind of a mainstream family entertainment. So I love that. And there I am on stage, and my character is Dr. Pemberton, and Sheldon is knocking. Dr. Pemberton. And I'm like, oh my God. And then they open the door and I have to be performing. But anyhow, the stage where they did that show for 12 years, I want to say it was stage 20, but whichever the number was, it's where the set for the attic was in the Goonies, where we retrieve the map and the Chester Copperpot story. And I tell the story of One-Eyed Willie and, you know, the war with the, you know, the great battle. And so they were all big Goonies fans too. And so we're chit-chatting and I'm looking up at the rafters and I'm looking at the door and they're like, you know, what are you doing? I said, I think this is the exact spot I found the map. And they're like, but I'll take a moment to look at it and try and remember what I was doing and where I was. And, you know, over the years, different things are important to you. Different memories are important to you. So it's great when when my kids see it. These conventions are incredible. I've met so many people who have my face tattooed on their body.
What is that like? Does that ever get like sort of difficult? Whoa! Have you ever had like a weird one tattooed in a weird place?
I've had it all, my dear. I've had it all. But there was once in Portland, Oregon, at a convention there at Rose City Comic Con. They called it because Portland is the city of roses. Or something, and a woman comes up, and she was a larger woman, and she had on, there were no sleeves, and my face was massive on her arm, and she was very shy.
Yeah,
and I looked at her, and I was like, and she almost didn't want to talk.
Oh,
and I was, oh well, it's a pleasure to meet you, and lovely this, and shall I come around and maybe take a picture with you and the thing? And she was, I swear, she would rather have been somewhere else. She was so nervous or something. But, you know, of course, everything comes back to your family. I took a picture and I sent it to my wife and kids. And they I don't know what they thought of it, but it was a little strange.
There's another film I want to talk about.
Okay.
My mom and dad got me this for my birthday back in the 90s.
California Man.
Yes.
You know California Man.
Who knows California? Or Encino Man, as it was
Encino
called.
Man in America, yes, but...
It's such a weird movie.
A guy came up to me in line today. His name is Dave Morgan.
Really?
Yeah. Dave, are you here? Dave Morgan, which is the name of my character in California Man.
Oh,
Dave Morgan.
God, amazing.
We look nothing alike.
It looked like such a fun movie to me. Did you have fun making it? And it so encapsulates the 90s as well in that time period.
Hey, buddy. Yeah. I have this line in that movie where at Pauly Shore, and I go, all you're about is nugs chilling and grindage.
Yes, oh my God.
Nugs chilling, grindage is food. I had a little code, a legend to decode what he was saying. But what can I say?
It's such a bizarre.
I want a sequel.
What do you think would happen?
Well, at the end of the first movie, there's another earthquake. And Betty Nuggs.
Yes.
Betty Nuggs. Don't tell the children yet. They're not old enough.
Would you do a sequel if they approached you?
I'm a professional actor. I show up. They want to do a sequel? Great. Let's go. Polly wants to do it. I'm sure Brendan would do it. But I want to see what happened. Did they have cave children?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I would feel, did I don't know. Who knows what it would be? It could be anything. My philosophy on sequels is the more the better.
Oh.
And some people, you know, they think, oh my God. Well, sequels. Remakes I'm a little bit more, kind of particular about. But because, you know what? If it's bad, don't watch it.
Yeah,
but
you're right.
You know, people want to have an emotional experience and they want to extend it. We don't, you know, there's something, I guess, noble about things that come to an end. You come to the end of the story, you know, Lord of the Rings. Well, I'm back and the book closes. And if you want to experience again, you start at the beginning of the book, but you know you're in for another long journey. Mm-hmm. But, I don't know. Ghostbusters. I like the Ghostbusters sequel. Some people didn't like it, but I'll go for, yeah.
But you're so right, because we live in this culture of people getting online and moaning. And if you don't like it, just don't watch it.
Yeah.
It's that simple, people.
And the other thing is, when I come to conventions, people interpret my me or movies I've been in or mm-hmm. characters or stories in a million different ways, needlepoint and in music and drawing and whatever. And people are expressing themselves. Well, the filmmakers and the actors and, you know, most of the people involved with it, they're expressing themselves. So let the next group of people express themselves and you can, you know, appreciate their hard work and then, you know, not watch. If somebody remade Back to the Future, I don't know if I would, you know, I might look at it just to see what they did, but no one's going to ever take Back to the Future away from me. You know, exactly. That's my feeling.
It's stuck in your brain. Now, a lot of your characters have got a lot of heart. I love this quote, people will root for anyone if they show them your heart. Now, Samwise...
I can't remember where I said that. People will root for anyone who shows them their heart. That I think, is the essence of the through line of the characters that I've been able to play. And it's true. You know, if you take, a beetle, a little dung beetle, and you set it here on the couch, and the dung beetle just wants to get to the other side of the couch where there's a girl dung beetle. After a few minutes, all you want is to see that dung beetle get to the other side. You know what I mean? There's a human instinct to feel about other people, to care about other people, to care about, and ideas, important ideas. So it's what makes me so frustrated about the state of the world today with the political and government and all the different movements that are happening. Somehow it seems to have just reached a place where people forget.
No,
they forget
right.
that we love each other and we want to live and we want peace and we want happiness and prosperity and we want to talk to each other, you know, with the way you teach your children to be respectful to each other. So
that's why I love your characters, you know, because when I watch you on screen, it's not overly saccharine. You know, you've just got, there's a nobleness in the heart and a niceness of the human spirit that comes through. Like with Samwise, you know, you see that absolutely with all of the characters you've played, even your very first role in The Goonies. Like, and even in California Man, he just wants to do good and get the girl, you know, and that's really, really
simple.
He
wants to be popular. And what's more important than that?
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah. Exactly.
No, really. What's more important than that?
Now, I read the use
but
of it.
But he's willing to dig a pool in his backyard to be popular. And he wants it so badly. That's his art. So, yes, that's true. Wonderful.
I remember watching that when I was younger thinking, I really want to live in California. It's not like this in Scotland. I couldn't dig a pool in my backyard. It'd be muddy and wet.
You've got rain there.
You got rain. But trust me, it's not Californian weather.
You know what movie? There's two movies, English. Well, one is an American movie, but it's as much an English movie as an American movie that I made in this country in 1989. Mm-hmm. Raise your hand if you were born after 1989. All right, leave your hand up if you were born after 1999. Mm-hmm. All right.
Okay.
Welcome, newbies. Thank you for raising your hand. So it's called Memphis Belle. You guys know Memphis Belle, the World War II movie about the B-17 bomber? And we filmed at RAF Duxford and RAF Bimbrook, and we were in Lincolnshire, and I went to do this SAS training down in the south of England, and I went to Brighton. Katie, where are you, Katie? Yeah, I went to Brighton. That was fun. And Penzance.
So you've been all over the UK?
I conquered this country.
Yeah.
So there's that one. And the other one is pure British. It's, I guess Lord of the Rings is too with Tolkien. But no, I was thinking of Terry Pratchett, The Color of Magic. Fellow Pratchetts. I got to play Two Flower in The Color of Magic. It's one of my favorite things I've ever got to do in my whole life. It was such a upsetting passing for Terry Pratchett to go so young. But we filmed that in Windsor. I got to live in Windsor for 3.5 months.
Windsor's lovely.
Do you know The Long Walk?
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Every day I was so fit in that movie. Oh my God, I was always running. I was running everywhere. Do you want to go to lunch? He did 3 miles. I would do the long walk from the castle all the way through the deer park up to where that Caesar statue was.
No wonder you were so fit.
Oh my gosh.
But surely you must be fit, like doing Lord of the Rings and stuff as well. Like you're outdoors.
Do you not? Okay, so.
I'm guessing.
Gollum calls me the stupid fat hobbit.
Well, that's true. I'm just. That
it's outrageous.
Can you? I wanted to ask.
I was doing push ups. Yeah, but I'm strong.
Because you did 6 weeks with a dialect coach, right? For the Samwise.
Andrew Jack, Englishman, and Roisin Cardi.
Can you give
Irish.
Us some tips for the Samwise accent?
Yeah.
Because I'm terrible at accents.
You are.
So what tips
would you
give us?
But you sound good. You're brilliant.
Well, this is
Scottish.
Just my accent.
It's great. I love the Scottish
sound.
We'll have to. Yeah. You do me too. Okay.
Yeah. So you give me some tips. And
so with Samwise, it's okay. West Country.
What?
West Country.
West Country.
Country.
West Country.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. And he's okay. They gave me a recording mm-hmm. of a farmer, and he said, and the sentence, and every time before I would go to work, I would listen to this sentence. That's a nice shiny apple.
Ooh. Okay, let me try that. That's
a nice
shiny
apple. you went a little special there at the end, didn't you? That's all right. So everything was like elongate the vowels. So Lembas bread is the special elven bread that if you have a little bite, it can a grown man or a hobbit you can it'll sustain you for 3 weeks or something like that. So I would say Lembas bread, and Andrew Jack would say, no, you need to elongate the vowels, so it's Lembas bread. And I said, Lembas bread? No, Lembas bread. Lembas bread? No, Lembas bread. So there was one take. Sometimes we would go to the hotel the next night,
yeah.
And you'd sit in the room, and Peter Jackson had a couch set up, and there was a screen, and we would watch all the rushes from the day before. And there's one shot of me looking at Frodo at the beginning of the Two Towers. And I said, do you want some Lembas bread? Elijah Wood fell on the floor laughing so hard. And I was like, maybe I can make it a little bit of my own too, you know, but that's a nice shiny apple. Potatoes, boil them, mash them, stick them in a stew. Can you say potatoes?
Potatoes.
Boil them.
In Scotland, just be tatties.
Patatties.
Or just tatties.
Yeah. Well, he also calls them taters.
Taters.
Potatoes.
Potatoes.
We're kind of doing a bit here. I like it. You did it. It was perfect.
I did it right.
Boil them.
Mash them.
Stick them in a stew. Boil them, mash them, stick them in a stew.
Boil them, mash them, stick them in a stew.
Potato. There's a meme.
Yes.
It was one of the first memes ever in all of memedom. And I looked at it and I thought, when I die...
Yes.
That's what they'll show on the news. Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, Sean Astin, actor known for potatoes. And they've got it animated with the potatoes marching and then the thing mashes them down.
Amazing.
Anyhow, people always ask me how I like them. All gratin? I don't know.
I've got some fan questions here. And Pixel Eye Pictures via Twitter said, how do you like your potatoes?
Oh, yes.
And I've got another Twitter.
This doesn't just happen, my dear. You have to work at it.
Potatoes are
a strong factor in every form.
I've got another Twitter question from Quinn Neary.
In shepherd's pie. Mm.
Oh, yeah.
That was the same group of people who liked Terry Pratchett. Interesting. We're going to talk later, that small group over there.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, I see you over there, too. Go ahead.
This is from Quinn Neary via Twitter. If you could have defeated the Demogorgon, how would you have done it? How would you have defeated it?
Stranger Things.
Yes. Right.
The Demogorgon.
Yes.
Dogs.
Yeah.
Also known as Demo Dogs. It's terribly upsetting.
Mm.
Bob stops running, period. I got out my eraser. And then he continues on very quickly out the gate. How would I have done it? Well, nothing too fancy, but maybe a knife right in the throat.
Just
cut them open, yeah.
Old school.
Or I could have been like Legolas. I could have had a bow and arrow or maybe a taser. Bob worked at Radio Shack. Maybe he'd been working. He invented a taser.
I've got another Twitter question.
Maybe,
here.
No. I could be like in Australia, Paul Hogan, who did come, was he? Crocodile Dundee.
That's
and
it,
he, and
yes.
he mesmerizes the German shepherds and they calm down.
Yes.
Oh, that would have been so good.
Would you have liked to have seen that? Yes. Yes. Last Twitter question here before we go on to an Instagram deep dive. Okay. So what is your favorite fantasy world from Bagoof Rob via Twitter? Favorite fantasy world? It's a hard one.
Not for me. It's Star Wars. It's always been Star Wars.
Star Wars fans?
It's always been Star Wars. I was 7 years old when that came out. And, you know, I borrowed my father's Super 8 camera, film camera. And I would do chores and make up enough money to go and buy the Super 8 cartridge film.
Yeah.
And we recreated Star Wars in our backyard. We had little miniatures and we built one of those pods, one of those space pods. And that was watching the making of Star Wars when George Lucas was, you know, showing you how they did the models and stuff. I really, one of the reasons I was, I think it's why I appreciated Lord of the Rings so much. Because when we got down to New Zealand, they had these things called bigatures, miniatures, but they were so massive. They could, it seemed silly calling them a miniature, but, you know, Minas Tirith, you know, two stories tall, and you could take a ladder and climb up, and wherever you would look on Minas Tirith, you know, or in the Mines of Moria, you could see little buckets and just everything. It was just like a little kid's fantasy. And I remember thinking, and honestly, when you look at the films back again, that's the best stuff, yeah. I think. I mean, it's so real. It makes it feel so real. So, yeah.
So let's go to the Instagram deep dive. I've dived very deep. There you go. That's my Photoshop job up there. Check that out. Really professional, like only the best content for you guys, top quality content. So let's go to the first picture. The first picture here from your Instagram. Let's have a look at it.
What's coming from my Instagram?
Right. So we have a picture here of Robin Williams and you. Yeah. I wanted to ask.
He loved Lord of the Rings.
Did he?
And he loved Gollum. Gollum was his favorite.
So where is this? Where was this?
I think that must have been at the Two Towers premiere in Westwood Village. Actually, right out in front of the Man Bruin Cinema, where when I was 16, I worked tearing tickets and selling popcorn and cleaning the butter maker and, you know, temperature in the theater. I worked at that theater. And there you are, 15 years later, I'm starring in this, you know, several hundred million dollar franchise and getting to meet one of the greats. I also met him at the Directors Guild of America, the union for the directors at their awards show. And we were backstage and he said something to me. And I said, well, I don't. And something about the longevity, the kind of the potential that it would have enduring. That baby's fine. You don't have to worry. I like that baby.
Oh.
I mean, you can keep it, but I like it. It's a beautiful baby. Hi, baby.
Hi.
Hello, boo-boo. Love babies. Just don't come on the plane just yet, because I have to fly back to Miami in the morning. I'm kidding. Baby's good. So he says to me, we're talking about he made some comment about the enduring legacy of what Lord of the Rings would become. And this was just when it was coming out. And I said, well, I don't know. You know, I kind of, not just modest, but you don't know necessarily what's going to mean something to people over time. And he said, oh, no, man. He goes, you guys are locked in. That expression, locked in, the idea that in the popular imagination, something can happen that is, I don't know if it's permanent, but, you know, how many generations it'll last. But he just made it. It's just something about the way he said that I so appreciate. And that, again, another tragic passing. So upsetting. But love Robin Williams.
We're going to move on to another game now. Instead, I'm going to move on from the Instagram deep dive. But before, we're going to move on to BFFs Getting to Know You. This is another game.
Is that you and me, BFFs?
Are we BFFs?
Yeah.
Yay. Yeah. Okay, so let's get the BFFs. Thanks. Look at that. Check that out.
Oh.
Top quality content. Guys, before we start this game, there's a mic there and there's a mic there. And if you have a question for Sean, start queuing up and we'll get to fan questions. Mic at this side of the room and mic at that side of the room. Don't be shy. Just jump up and get to the mic.
So, getting to know you.
Getting to know all about you. I feel like you're in tune and I'm out of tune. Sorry, I was letting the side down.
We switched.
Yeah, we switched. So answer these really quick, okay? This is, if we were getting to know you and be your BFF, okay? Your most embarrassing moment. Now?
Once, when I was 16, I made a deal with a man. He would bring a recording equipment to my show, and I would go and present awards to cheerleaders. It was a cheerleading competition.
Mm-hmm.
So 16, 17, 18-year-old girls, thousands of them. And so I'm there at the stadium. It was a massive stadium. And I had stubble like I did now. And I thought, oh, if I'm going to meet these girls, you know. So I went into the bathroom and I brought a razor, but I didn't have shaving cream. So I just dry shaved like this.
Oh, no.
Right, really fast, really fast. And I look in the mirror, blood.
Oh, no.
Pouring down my face. I mean, like it's a horror movie. Oh. So I'm trying to get it to blot up. And they're like, Sean, it's time. And so I finally get it all so it's at least coagulating a little bit. And I go out there and they have those cameras that like, you know, for the Jumbotron.
Yeah.
And so, hi, now from St. Louis, the something or other things. And the girls come up and they're like, oh, my gosh. And they look at me. They all have this disgusted look on my face. So I'm sure I've had something more embarrassing, but that's the first one that pops in mind.
What qualities do you look for in a best friend? Qualities. Go for it.
Large breasts.
Fair.
All my guy friends are like that. No, I don't know. What do I look for in a best friend? My wife is my best friend. So, and I, when we met when I was 19, I saw her and I just, in my mind, I tackled her.
You're like, yes, you're the one.
I tackled her and never let her go.
I feel that way about my husband. Yeah. It's nice when you meet your person.
Yeah. She tries to get away all the time. I think it's illegal. What is it about her? There's just her heart, you know, something about her heart. It's so perfect.
And your biggest pet peeve?
Okay, in airports lately, mm-hmm. when I'm walking, people have forgotten how to walk.
Yes.
What is wrong with people? Even if they're not on their phones, it's like they're taking the same disorientation that they would have if they were looking at their phones and they've carried it into their non-phone walking.
Yes.
So you're walking down the, you know, people, you pick a line. I'm walking this way. Now, it's one thing if somebody has to go from here to there, and so you cross paths, it's fine to be patient. But when people are heading that way, and they just kind of wander into your path.
And you're like, mate, walk better.
It's exhausting.
Oh, our last one.
I'd like to have a paint gun.
There was a Facebook group for a time called I Like to Punch Slow Walking People in the Back of the Head.
I don't mind slow. Just hold your line, people.
Same one.
Yeah, hold your line.
And the last one, very quick, because we need to get the fan questions. If you're feeling down or sad, how would we make you feel better? What would pick you up?
Well, the truth is that it doesn't look like it at the moment, but I'm a runner.
Yes.
I've done 13 big city marathons. I must come and do the London Marathon.
You must.
It's strange how they organize it. It's so big. They have 3 starting shoots.
Yeah.
But anyhow, and I did the Ironman Triathlon in Hawaii, and there's something about nature, you know, mountains. And I love running with large groups of people because I interact with large groups of people all the time. Mm-hmm. And it's not just because you're famous, but our way of relating now, person to person, we take pictures with each other. And that's great. I love taking selfies. I love taking pictures. It's memorializing a moment. But there is a repetitive quality to it. So sometimes I like the idea that we're all together, but we're moving in the same direction. We kind of have a common purpose. At the end, we've shared something together that we'll never forget.
Yeah.
You know, and then when you chit chat about it, you can, you know, I want to know what happened to you on mile 11 and you want to know what happened to me. And, you know, so there's something about that. So if we'll all go for a run tomorrow morning, we'll be at the hotel just around the corner starting 6 a.m.
Who's up for a run at 6 a.m.?
Yep.
Yeah, that's like
one taker. Were you the millennial who raised your hand too? I like you. I like that one.
Right. Now on to fan questions. Let's start over here. Sir, go for it. What's your name? What's your question?
My name is Ryan. That is loud. As a teenager pursuing acting myself, I wanted to ask you, Sean, in terms of method, motivation, and intention, how do you work as a professional actor?
My good luck to you in your career. I'm sure we will be on a film or television set or stage before too long.
Thank you.
You have a seriousness of purpose and a gravity that will carry you far. My father taught me, my mother and father are actors, famous actors. More important than famous, they're good quality actors. My father's admonition to me, and then when I got older and studied for a little bit with Stella Adler, she said the same thing. The truth. It's the actor's job to tell the truth. You're an instrument, a vessel through which the truth of the playwright flows. So your job is to expunge artifice from your being and just be as authentic and real and honest as you can. Even if you're playing an absurd character, there's an honesty to being the fool or a fop. Whether it's a soap opera or an Academy Award winning part or a puppet show, you come to it with the same level of commitment to being honest and you'll be good.
Thank you very much.
Thank you
Let's move over here. What's your name? What's your question?
More quickly, shouldn't I?
Fine. Answer the way you want.
My name is Josh. I just wanted to ask, on the set of Goonies, what was your favorite part about acting?
I got to kiss Cary Grant. And that's not a joke. That was the best part. The pirate ship was fine, but kissing the girl was better.
Thank you very much. Let's go back over to this side. What's your name? What's your question, sir?
Hi, my name is Sam.
The real Sam.
After Samwise.
Hi, Samwise.
Hi. My question for you is, since you're in the UK, are you going to be meeting up with any of your fellow members of the fellowship?
Oh, meeting up with the fellowship, are you?
They're all hotshot, move to America, get rich and famous people now. I don't know. I'm coming back here to the old country to keep it real, you know?
Excellent. Nice.
So, no, I don't, not this particular trip. I've seen Billy Boyd, your Scottish mate, and Elijah at different conventions over the last year. But I haven't, I'm only here for 36 hours. Mm. So thank you for bringing up such a painful thought.
I'm so sorry.
Thank you, Sam.
Thank you.
And you over here, what's your name? Question.
Hi, I'm Jack.
Hi, Jack.
My question is, because you've done Stranger Things and Lord of the Rings and the Goonies, would you join Marvel or DC?
Yeah. Oh, you want one or the other?
Yeah.
Well, I just was in Supergirl.
You were in Supergirl?
Yes, she was, yeah.
Yeah. I don't think that's fully... It was like 6 hours worth of work, but I got to have a fight in Martian. It was awesome. I do not have a particular... I'm agnostic. Yep. You know, I'm Switzerland. I'm Switzerland. So I also... I'm the voice of Shazam in Justice League, one of the TV shows. Yep. Yep. I was Raphael, voice of Raphael in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle for Nickelodeon from 2012 to 16 or whatever. So I'm very promiscuous. I'll go wherever.
Thanks, Jack. You. Who have you got over here? Who's next? What's your name?
Evan.
Hi, Evan. What's your question? Evan.
Well, in The Lord of the Rings, was the feet annoying?
Did the feet get in the way in Lord of the Rings? She got those big
Evan,
feet.
Evan, that is an astute question. Yes, they were occasionally terribly annoying. They were wet and sticky and uncomfortable, and they pulled out the hair on your feet, and sometimes a horse would step on your toe and rip off your hobbit toe, and sometimes it wasn't. You'd run up a volcano, and the rocks would cut in, and you have cuts all over your feet. Stupid Tolkien.
Thanks, Evan. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Evan.
Over here, what's your name?
Hi, Sean. I'm Saban. I was just wondering, you know, you said you did Raphael and Ninja Turtles. I'm a huge Ninja Turtles fan.
Come on, stop talking and start fighting.
Yeah. So I was just wondering, you know, in your show, the 80s Turtles came back. The 80s Turtles came back in your show. So I was wondering if in any future versions of Ninja Turtles, if they were to ask you to come back, would you do it?
Oh, yeah, in a heartbeat. The 80s Turtles came back. And actually, one of the 80s Turtles was playing Leonardo. He was Rob Paulson who played... Raphael in the original was now playing Leonardo. He's now directing the new one.
Yeah.
I'm a little surprised we haven't gotten the call to come back, but I think maybe they need a little space to create their own show, make sure they have their own identity. But yeah, no, of course. I'd be happy to participate, of course.
Thank you.
I'm very easygoing.
Thank you so much. Who have we got over here? What's your name? What's your
I'm friend? Jake.
Jake.
Hi, Jake.
What was your favorite part of being Bob in Stranger Things?
Kissing Winona Ryder.
Kissing stuff, you enjoy that.
Yeah, my wife doesn't like it when I say that. She doesn't think it's a funny joke, but I don't know, you know, I don't know.
And it's Winona.
It's Winona. It's we grew Winona. Up alongside each other in Hollywood, and we did a little movie together many years ago, and so we were back together again, and she's so sweet, and Bob, you know, what was great about Bob was just, again, his heart. He just is a decent, nice, sweet, loyal, just wants to be, give her, you know, make her life better and help her children. And, you know, there was the very first line that we filmed of Bob's. It's when the brothers are in the bedroom and Will is, you know, feeling badly that people are talking to him differently than normal because of his experience. And his brother is saying, listen, there's David Bowie type people and there's Kenny Rogers type people. Who do you want to be, David Bowie or Kenny Rogers? And Bob walks in and says, Kenny Rogers. I love Kenny Rogers. And that kind of guileless, you know, happy, open thing. I feel very comfortable doing that. I also, frankly, loved the final episode for Bob. And just getting to become Sigourney Weaver in Aliens was, like, awesome.
Thank you so much for your question.
Thank you.
Over here, lovely. What's your name? Question.
Hi, I'm Fizz, and I absolutely love all your work, but this is a bit of an odd question.
I love your voice.
Thank you.
Such a beautiful voice.
But I've just bought this bat plushie. Could you name it?
You want me to name the bat plushie?
Yeah.
It's Gus. I see Gus. Hey, Gus. Hey. It's short for Gustafson. He took off. He was in Sweden, and he started out over the channel.
Yep.
It was a thing blew in. He got lost. He landed somewhere near the Dover, you know, by the White Cliffs, and then he's been lost ever since. And now he finally made his way to you. And thank God for Gus.
Give a round of applause for Gus. Yes. I hope that answers that conundrum. Next, who have we got over here?
Ariana.
Hi there, what's your question?
Will you, like, ever do, like, a Goonies sequel?
Goonies sequel.
Well, when I said at the beginning that I liked sequels, I meant that for Goonies as well. So, yes. In fact, the Goonies sequel I want to see, I want to go back in time, and I want to meet One-Eyed Willie. Ooh. In the middle of the battle. That's what I want to do. But I'm just the actor. I don't get to choose.
Just putting that out there, though.
Put it out there. I never put it out there, but now, you know, we're getting old. Might as well.
Why not?
Thank you, my dear.
Thank you very much. Next.
Yeah, my name's Laura.
Hi.
In Lord of the Rings, if you could have played any other character, what would you have liked to have played?
Well, when the casting director called, or when my agent called and said, she talked to the casting director and they said, you have to come in for Samwise Gamgee. They think it's going to be your part. And I said, well, okay, Samwise Gamgee. And I'd never heard of Lord of the Rings. So I went to the bookshop and I got all the, you know, three books, and I came home and I started reading them. And I thought, well, now why do I have to play Samwise? I like this Aragorn. He's kind of cool. He's tough Strider, you know, he's got a sword and... You know, I didn't even know he became the king. That would make it worse. So, and I said that to my agent, and she said, no.
Thank you for your question. Thank you. Who have you got over here?
Hi, my name's Amelia. And say in about 50 years, would you want to be remembered for, say, like, your legacy?
Ooh. Thank you for that question.
So 50 years from now, the world is still on fire. But we're remembering Sean Astin. There's a giant monument. What's on there? What's on there? What kind of words?
Well, you'll see the monument to my three daughters, and there'll be a little one off to the side. You say, oh, that was the father of those three girls. Wow, he must have been special. And if you read the little inscription on my statue, it'll say, not really, it was my wife's doing. I think Rudy is the most singularly identifiable character that I've played because he's so much determination and you know, commitment to achieving something. But he's not an ideal literary character like Samwise. So Samwise, The Lord of the Rings, is unquestionably the most important work that I've done in my life, and it will be the most important work at the end of my life looking back. But Rudy is me. It's Sean. I am Rudy. We're all Rudy in a way, but Rudy is an American football movie about a boy who wants to play for one of the great universities, the Catholic University in the middle of the country, Notre Dame. And he's not tall enough, strong enough. He has no football ability. His grades are terrible. There's absolutely no reason why he should be allowed to do that, but he just is relentless in his quest to do it. And finally, at the end of the movie, spoiler alert, he gets in for one play. And at the end of the play, when the game is over, his teammates carry him off the field on their shoulders. And his triumph is nothing compared to the people who are actually playing the game, but it's specific to him. And I feel like, and it's real for him and for the people who know him. That's where my quote comes from. So I feel like that's, listen, getting to play Samwise, Sean getting to play Samwise is like Rudy. He's just wanting to get into Notre Dame, getting to do something so important, so meaningful. So, it'll be nice to be remembered, if at all.
Thank you for your question. I've got a gentleman with gremlin. Hi.
Hi.
What's your name? What's your question?
That's not Gizmo.
Yeah.
Go for it. What have you got?
My father was in that movie. My father is the one, the janitor who accidentally spills water on the gremlins in the beginning of the second movie. So you're welcome.
Oh, that's good. What's your favorite practical effect in the movie you've been in?
Oh. In Lord of the Rings?
Or any, or Lord of the Rings?
Practical effect?
Wow, that's a great question.
That is a good question. Thank you.
Well, the hobbits are little, so they had to find lots of creative ways of making us look little. The most obvious now is the computer-generated green screen manipulations. But from a practical effect, they did some really fun things. They built a wagon wheel, a giant wagon wheel, and they have the camera set like this. We're in Brie, and there you can see, I think it's the Prancing Pony or whichever one it is, the restaurant or bar, whatever, tavern. And we're coming, the four hobbits are coming up the street towards the camera, and they roll the wagon wheel in front of the camera, and all of us are looking up as though we just saw a carriage run by. So it's just a trick of the mind. Yeah. I just thought that was the coolest thing ever. They would also do things like they would make an oar for the elven canoes that we were in, the elven boats, and for the hobbits, they made the oars really, really big. So our hands couldn't go all the way around it. So it looked like little people holding a big, you know, there were all those kind of things I love.
Thank you so much. Good question. We've got time for one more question, I'm afraid. One more, but Sean will be signing autographs and doing all the stuff. So you can ask Sean when you see him later. One more question. What is your name and what is your question?
All right, my name's Tom, and I was just wondering, you already established that the hobbit feet were occasionally inconvenient or uncomfortable. I was just wondering, with the feet and the ears and all the other practical makeup, how long did that all take to apply, and was that irritating at all?
Well, the hardest part about it was being fat. Like, I would just run the LA Marathon when, I don't know stones, I know pounds, but I weighed probably 135 pounds when I did the marathon. And I get the job, and by the time we started shooting and throughout the course of it, I got up to 200 pounds. So, which is fine, you know, you get out of shape, but then after a certain period of time, you start running again, eating right, and you go back the other way. Well, for Lord of the Rings, I had to be like that for nearly 2 years. And at a certain point, I'm looking at the mirror, and I can't recognize the fat guy. I can't see myself. I can't see me who I know and feel good about. I just see, you know, and Elijah would always get mad at me, like, you're Sam. Just enjoy being Sam. And, like, in character, yeah, I'm Sam. But on Saturday morning, you know, I'm looking and I'm like, ugh. And just sitting down and walking, and I was just fat. And that, you can't take the, you know, you can take the feet and the ears and the hair off. But to answer your question, 4 a.m, we'd show up, stand on a box, took 1 hour and 20 minutes to put the feet on, glue, wet, cold glue, sticky, jabby glue. I'm not complaining, I'm just describing it. And then the ears probably took 25 minutes. And the hair probably took another 25, 30 minutes. So what was all that? Somewhere around 2 hours.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Now, Sean.
And by the way, I wouldn't change it for the world. I'd go back and do it again if I could. It's just miserable. But I loved it. It was miserable.
Sean, it was lovely. I've really enjoyed not just chatting to you on this stage, but I've enjoyed chatting to you backstage as well. Soon as I met Sean, he made me feel so at ease and comfortable, and you're just so lovely to speak to. Honestly, go and see this man and chat to him if you can. Get his autograph, take photos. Sean, have a lovely time at
Brie. Thank you. I love you so much. You're so sweet. And we can talk whenever we want. We can be friends now.
Are we BFFs?
There you go, BFFs. Yay, cool.
Yes.
Okay. So, but what I was going to say is Birmingham is so cool. I didn't realize the architecture was going to be as cool as it was.
Nice, right?
It's really cool. Some of those buildings, and it's got the history, and, you know, I studied the Industrial Revolution a little bit, so I feel like connected to time a little bit in this country, and you know, I've made a couple movies here, and I've traveled here, and it's just always good to be back. I've done a lot of conventions in England. It's always good to be back here, and I just want to thank you all for the hospitality and line. You've been so generous and welcoming, and so I really appreciate that you guys opened up your hospitality to me, and it means a lot. Thank you so much.
A round of applause to you guys. Thank you. And an even huger round of applause to Mr. Sean Astin.
So that was the interview with Sean Astin. Hope you like that. Stranger Things, of course, is probably the most recent thing he was been in, other than Supergirl. Supergirl you can find on Sky One. Stranger Things you can find on Netflix. Now we have some highlights for next week on TV. So, highlights for next week. Fairly limited, actually. There's not that many new things starting.
That's okay.
Yeah, which is fine. At the moment. There is a lot more coming over the next few weeks. But yes, not that much stuff released this week. One of the things, of course, is Rick and Morty, which they moved the date from January to November on E4. So 20th of November at 10 p.m. on E4, not Channel 4. Rick and Morty Season 4 launches. I'm sure there's a lot of people that are very happy to have that back. I'm very much looking forward to it. Sticking with animated things, Final Space, Season 2 of that comes to Netflix on the 24th of November.
Have you ever seen that?
I haven't actually watched it. It looked quite good, but...
I watched the trailer for it, and then I went to watch it and then didn't. But...
Yeah, I know. I was a bit like that, but I know it's got quite a big fan base. It's just, there's so much stuff, as we're saying, out there at the moment. It's just not something I've managed to get to yet, but I know it's got quite a good fan base for that, so...
I am interested in it.
So. Yes, so do I. So Final Space, the animated series, that is back on the 24th of November on Netflix, and 8 Days, which is the original from Sky Deutschland. This is coming to Sky Atlantic, so it's a German language thing. It sees a 40-kilometer wide meteor racing towards the middle of Europe, and it's 8 days, tells the story of a world we've never seen before. So it's a sort of the oncoming destruction of Earth by an asteroid, essentially, seems to be the setup. So it says season one. I'm not sure how you get to a season two from that, but yes, presumably... I don't know. Maybe not the asteroid, of course. I have no idea. I'm rather intrigued. So, yes, that's a Sky original. That's from Sky Germany. That is coming to Sky Atlantic on the 26th of November at 10 past 10. And that's all the new shows for this week. So there's only three of them. But, yes, as I said, it's not like there's a shortage of things to watch out there at the moment.
No, at all. And I still have about 25 hours of deliveries and Death Stranding through.
So, yes.
Or roughly that many. I don't know how much I've got left, but yeah.
So unless you've got anything else you want to mention, where can people find you?
You can follow me on Twitter at eTalkUK. As of course David said, we're doing Walking Dead and Watchmen and another show that starts with W, Witcher. We're covering that in December. I'm going to be covering that in December. Still lots of podcasts. We are heading towards some mid-season finales though, like Good Place is ending next week, or not ending, mid-season finale next week, and then Walking Dead's got two left, so we're heading there soon. And then we'll have Crisis on Infinite Earths soon-ish.
Yes. Let's not get into that. No, there isn't. No, Sky still aren't airing Batwoman. Yes. And no, we don't know where it is in the UK. Yeah. We'll cross that bridge when we come to it anyway. So, obviously for us, you can go to geektown.co.uk throughout the week to see the latest air date information. If you want to get in touch with your questions and comments, email us on podcast@geektown.co.uk. You can leave a message on the website post. Find us at Geektown on Twitter, on Facebook at facebook.com/geektown, on YouTube at youtube.com/geektown. There are the MCM Birmingham videos going up there, and on Instagram at Geektown UK, which will have lots of cosplay photos going up very soon. That's everything for this week. We shall see you next week. Goodbye.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.